May it please the court.
Good morning.
I'm Jess Askew here on behalf of the appellants. Judge Bright, good morning. It's nice to see you.
I'm Judge Bright.
Yes, Judge Bright, it's nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you too. Arkansas is a very favorite state of mine.
I love being from Arkansas, and this case is one of the reasons why. We have weird things that have happened in our history, none of which any of us can be proud of. And this case illustrates the maxim, I think, that the road to Hades is often paved with good intentions. With good intention, the General Assembly passed this 1989 statute, and with good intention, I presume, the parties settled a desegregation case in 1991 in Garland County, including Hot Springs. Now, my clients, two of my own clients, had to tell black parents that their black children could not transfer from one of my client districts to another of my client districts solely on account of race because of the compulsion of the federal court order. So, we're not crying over spilt milk. We're not trying to deal with the horrible history of my state. We are looking at the equity and the prospective equity of going forward in Garland County with this order that requires two of my clients to do what they had to do. And that poor parent went to the State Board of Education, tried to get some relief, and couldn't get it, and it's only because of this federal court order. The settlement agreement, ironically, was set up, and it says this in the memorandum or the settlement agreement or both, it was set up to allow minority students in Hot Springs School District to transfer out to other districts. Those aren't my clients. So now we have a minority family who lives in one of my districts who can't transfer to another of my districts because of race. That's inequitable. It cannot stand. Judge Dawson made clear error under Rule 60b-5. His error was applying the wrong legal standard. He applied the standard of Freeman versus Pitts. We're not here to terminate a school desegregation decree based on compliance.
Let me ask, because that's a little less than clear to me. Are you seeking to terminate that settlement agreement? And because that's at least the way it's been framed, or to modify it in some way?
You're absolutely correct. The point I was making is terminate based on Freeman versus Pitts, okay, which is compliance unitary status, as opposed to terminate under Rule 60b-5. We do ask that this settlement agreement be terminated under Rule 60b-5, so, and it's simply because there's nothing left.
Let me ask the question. How is terminating it suitably tailored to change circumstances as RUFO requires?
Right. The question, in my view, is what else is there in this settlement agreement other than the 1989 Act and its compulsion to allow inter-district transfers on the basis of race? And I submit that there is nothing. Judge Dawson never looked at that. He used the wrong legal standard, said we did not show unitary status.
So if we agree with you about the legal standard, would it be appropriate to have him take the first look at that question?
That would not be inappropriate. I take the position that there's nothing left in the settlement agreement other than that 1989 Act, but reasonable minds could differ.
What do you mean by nothing left? Do you mean there's no other provisions that could stand alone if you don't honor the 1989 Act?
There's nothing left to do. There are pages of programs that the state was going to implement. Most of those have been adopted by state statute anyway, long ago. There was a direct statement that two of those programs were going to be used for 2 years. Well, that we got finished with that in 1993. There's a monitoring that goes on once a year.
Well, if you're talking about full compliance, aren't you pushing yourself back into the Freeman standard?
We don't have to go there. And so we're asking to modify or terminate under Rule 60b-5 because it's inequitable to go forward. Part of the RUFO standard, part of the Horn versus Flores standard is when legislatures and school districts are doing things there shouldn't, and then there's no reason for a federal court to mandate contradictory action or even consistent action, then what's the purpose of the federal court order? That's what I'm suggesting may be the case, Judge Kelly, with regard to these other aspects of the settlement agreement. Why have these testing provisions for children? We've got that already in Arkansas. We've
come a long way. But this wasn't presented to the district court.
No, and frankly, we asked for termination of the settlement. The opposition was we had to show unitary status, and we never got on the right track in the district court. The right track would have been Rule 60B-5, look at the equity of the situation that we're presenting now.
So, so it's your position that you don't have to also show a change in factual situation, that somehow that there's no longer any need to remedy the past intentional discrimination?
Well, remedying discrimination and discriminating on the basis of race are two different things, Your Honor.
But aren't those looked at differently? Hasn't even the Supreme Court discussed this idea of remedying the past discrimination as something different? It seems that
parents
involved, that was key.
Absolutely. Agreed completely. That's the compliance aspect. We're not looking to show unitary status. We're looking to stop having to perform under a consent decree that requires race discrimination as inequitable prospectively. I call it the spilled milk rule. We're not crying over the spilled milk, not apologizing or trying to justify or change anything that happened in the past. We are where we are. My client has minorities in a district who can't transfer to another of my client's districts because of their race. And that's wrong, and it needs to stop. Your very appropriate questions are, what else is there in this consent decree? Does that mean we wad up and throw away the whole thing? We never got there. And perhaps we should. But I think if we did, we would find that most of the language of that settlement agreement from 1991 has to do with programs, monitoring, things that are done anyway by the Department of Education in Arkansas in the regular course as part of the vast improvements of public education that have occurred in the last 25 years.
See, it seems to me that if you agree that there are other provisions, even though you say it's not necessary to have a settlement agreement, that settlement agreement obviously has something to do with the state taking steps to eradicate the problem of race discrimination in the schools. Seems to me that is somewhat of an argument that Freeman applies here. And as long as the whole aspect of what was the problem when the settlement agreement was entered into, there's still implied provisions here that are still effective and still important in eradicating race problems in the school districts in Arkansas.
Judge Bright, correct. We're not saying that this is a Freeman unitary status case. It would look completely different. I would submit that the evidence would be very clear, I think, that these other programs really don't have anything to do with remedying segregation. And we would also look at what is the benchmark. If we were off in that other area of compliance with a consent decree, we would be looking at what are the measures. What are the benchmarks that we have to do to comply? Well, the record would show everything that was supposed to be done has been done, even to the disadvantage of racial minorities who are being discriminated against in Garland County. That's what the record would show. And then we would also have this record that there is no evidence, no finding, no legal conclusion, no constitutional violation, no exact fit of a remedy to the constitutional violation shown by the facts on the record of this case.
We just don't have it. When the settlement agreement was reached?
Yes.
That's the point in time?
Yes.
So what would the fairness hearing have involved?
Well, we see it in the record. We have a very thin record. And the notice that was sent out to the public said this is going to allow transfers from one district to another. In fact, it did not do that. You know, I'm violating my own spilled milk rule. We're here looking prospectively. We're not looking retrospectively. But if we were to try to measure compliance, we would have to look at what are the obligations under the settlement, what was the violation, what was the constitutional violation, and then we would be trying to look at things like from Horn versus Flores. To justify federal involvement, we would have to show a violation of federal law occurring today. And we wouldn't show that. We wouldn't get there. But I'm trying to stay out of that branch of the case entirely. There was error for Judge Dawson to go there. We're here under Rule 60B-5. It may be that once the 1989 Act is excised from the settlement agreement, which is, I think, the best description of the relief we seek, then there is nothing left. That should be determined in the first instance by the federal judge in charge, who is now Judge Hickey, and that's fine. My clients don't object to that. So I don't want to get hung up on this terminology that we ask for termination. We do. Maybe we swept too broadly. But we don't think that there's anything of substance to this settlement other than the 1989 Act. And it has been struck down as unconstitutional. It's been repealed as unconstitutional. It's bad. We shouldn't be compelled to comply with it. And a federal court ought not be the one telling us to comply with it. May I reserve the rest of my time, Your Honors?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Askew. Morning, Mr. Roberts.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, judges. May it please the court. I represent the Hot Springs School District and speak today also for the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. I'm from Camden, Arkansas, which is a small town in southern Arkansas. Hot Springs. I represent several school districts in that area. I really, in listening to my brother Askew, decided that I would charge ahead to my last line on my outline, which is, what relief do I want? What do I want this court? What do I propose? What do I suggest this court do? What I suggest is this: an order affirming the district court for the reasons that there has not, contrary to what the brief says, there hadn't been a change in law. There is no substantial inequity brought about by the application of a remedy that takes race into account that is not more apparent than real. I think there's an available statute, namely Arkansas Code 618.307, that involves distance from schools, that had it been relied on by the two school districts that Mr. Askew represents and by the Walker family, they could have gotten their transfer. Be that as it may, whether, as Judge Dawson pointed out, it was isolated or they just overlooked an available remedy is beside the point. I think that an affirmance with a caveat that this court, I have seen from time to time, applies to tell the parties, all the parties to this lawsuit, that this is a remedy for past constitutional violations, but it is one that can't go on in perpetuity. And they need to sit down at a table and try to work out a series of modifications that could eventually lead to complete removal of federal court supervision in the 7 school district.
Well, on the question of whether the court applied the proper standard, Freeman versus Rufo, doesn't the Smith case suggest that using under 60B, it's okay to use the Rufo standard even if it could result in termination of the underlying order?
I agree. I really do.
So
I think it
just, wait a minute. Then do you agree that the district court used the wrong standards?
I don't think they ever used a standard because there was no evidence, no record was made. I understand the importance of the distinction argued by Mr. Askew to be, do you review the record for an abuse of discretion or do you review it de novo? They're in the record. I mean, I think the Smith case,
a mistake of law is an abuse of discretion, right? If the district court, my reading was the district court applied a Freeman standard. Now, I may be wrong, but.
I don't think a standard was applied. I mean, I was there. My thought was the court was incredulous that there was no evidence going to be presented. And made it clear that it was termination, not modification, that was sought. And those were the last questions and inquiries that I remember being made about it. I think Rufo, again, I think the lesson there in the Smith case, to me, which is clearly a modification case, I agree with that. And after a lot of pitching back and forth, that's where the court told Judge Wright that what she really meant to say was that this is a modification of the decree. And it could have led after further inquiry and might still lead after further inquiry. I have some familiarity with that case to a termination of that order. And I think you could have the same situation here if on remand, if it's remanded.
Yeah, I mean, that's at least it seems to me the appropriate standard, according to Smith, may well be Rufo. And if so, then perhaps a remand to see, you know, we know the 1989 Act is gone, so there is a changed circumstance. So maybe a remand to see, on the first instance, I think Mr. Askew suggested today, whether there is anything left or not.
I think that clearly the Teague cases, the district court, and then the mootness case. I don't agree with the proposition that the words in the settlement are gone. I think Teague, the teaching of the mootness determination in Teague versus Cooper is that it's disappeared as far as precedent is concerned. I think this court's footnote 2, as I remember, which I think I had cited somewhere, but it's footnote 2 in Teague versus Cooper, says exactly that. You can take this group of words with a racial distinction, a racial classification in it, put it in a state statute of statewide application, and it's unconstitutional. You can lift the same group of words and put it in a court approved remedy for past constitutional violations, and it's perfectly fine.
So is it? It's your view that there has been a change in the law, but without additional factual record, there's no way to know whether that applies to the settlement agreement.
I think that's true. There's nothing to go on. Although I think, on the face of it, it doesn't apply to the settlement. As I said, citing the Teague case. You can take this group of words, which is unconstitutional, in a statewide. The difference to me is one policy versus remedies, which I think I use that phrase too much in the brief, probably. But
and so that the settlement agreement still remains the remedy, and that
exactly.
that the language of the 1989 Act can remain there as a remedy, and that remains constitutional unless and until there's some record that would show it's not.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly what I think. I think
if there's a remand, do I understand there's another judge rather than Judge Dawson who would be is handling the school cases now?
That is my understanding. I think Judge
Dawson. Who would be the judge?
I believe it's Judge Hickey has got the reassignment after it was passed around a couple of times, but It's nominal because nothing's happened on it, of course, since then. But Judge Hickey has the case.
But Judge Dawson is still on this case, isn't he?
Judge Dawson is spending all his time at the racetrack in Hot Springs, as far as
I'm aware. He's not doing much work, is that the idea?
He's retired, as opposed, I don't think he's on senior status anymore, but you're out of mind.
I understand. I just. In other words, he's now retired?
I believe is that your understanding? I think it's true, he's retired.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that, thank you.
The I don't know. I don't agree necessarily that a remand is necessary. There is a document. It's document 154 in the case file, which is an order by Judge Hendren in 2004, earlier in this case, which he put aside an effort to avoid the settlement and find some of the parties in contempt. And in that case, he said that the settlement agreement and his order in the case mandated that the parties not seek litigation as a remedy without being able to prove to him that they had sat down and tried to work these issues out. And it's found at pages 6 and 7 and paragraph 9 of that. And again, I think that I never thought this case would be appealed, which doesn't mean anything. I expected the appellants now to ask for a hearing and go ahead and make the record on their motion. And again, I think whether the I don't see much use in making them file a new motion and do it over again, but I think that's the proper procedure to follow to get where we all need to be. I mean, there was, I don't think it matters whether a constitutional violation is established, if I can switch to a criminal dichotomy, by a guilty plea, by finding by a jury, or by a nolo plea. You wreck the fabric of settlements being favored as a matter of public policy if you don't honor the settlement agreement. If you go back and tell these people that they should have litigated to proven that it was a segregated system. The remedy worked in many ways, and there are two purposes in this remedy, the 89 Act remedy. One was to stop Hot Springs from becoming essentially an all-black school district, and the other one was to promote integrative transfers. It succeeded in the former. It doesn't appear to have succeeded in the latter. The racial composition of Garland County School District is almost exactly what it was in 1991. There are relatively few black students in Garland County, 13% of the total, I believe, is accurate. Of the 13%, 80% of them go to school in Hot Springs. That was the identical situation at the time the lawsuit was filed. It's the same situation today. Some fluctuations among the other six districts. I would like to let my colleague who traveled this far and who represents the plaintiffs, Justin Hurst, have the rest of my time.
Very well.
Any questions before I sit?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Roberts.
You very much.
Morning, Mr. Hurst.
Morning, Your Honor. Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Roberts said, I'm Justin Hurst here representing the plaintiffs, W.T. Davis, and the other individuals. I appreciate the opportunity to address this this morning. We are, in essence, basically on the same side as the Hot Springs School District, and I would concur with all the arguments and positions of the school district that Mr. Roberts has articulated. Honestly, I know I've got a very short amount of time. I don't really know what I can add because Mr. Roberts pretty much hit the points. And
let me ask you the same questions. Did the court apply a Freeman standard or a Rufo standard, and which one is appropriate?
Well, again, I would agree with Mr. Roberts that, and I was present at that hearing, at the last hearing with Judge Dawson, it doesn't appear as though a standard really was applied because although arguments were made, there was no evidence taken at the hearing to address a standard. I would also concur with both counsels that the Rufo standard may apply, but without evidence taken from the district court, as I stand here, I don't know if I can say which one was.
What evidence do you need other than the fact that the 1989 Act was repealed?
Well, I think one of the issues in the settlement agreement was the monitoring of these schools. As Mr. Roberts mentioned,
isn't that alone a changed circumstance that could well result in some modification or termination of the the agreement?
Yes.
I mean, it was a significant part of the underlying agreement, I think.
I would agree. Clearly agree. That's clearly a changed circumstance with that statute being repealed. But I think an important part is that there was monitoring requirements set up in the agreement. And the fact is, Your Honors, as Mr. Roberts pointed out, if we look as we stand here today in April of 2016, racial makeup of the schools, school district, is almost identical to what it was in 1991. And that's, I believe it's in Joint Appendix 270 to 275. I may be off a little bit. But that has the statistical breakups of where we are. Almost identical.
And that would make sense if we were doing sort of a unitary status type analysis, right?
Correct.
But I'm not sure, you know, at least for this narrow issue of the 1989 Act and modifying the agreement based on that, I mean, maybe he would need to present that sort of evidence later to get a full termination, right. But I don't know.
It's hard without that evidence, and I think that's where you're going with that, Your Honor, and I would agree with that. It's hard to determine.
Mr. Hurst, as I understand, all the parties here seem to agree that there's no record made one way or the other that the settlement agreement was completely done away with by what was done with the finding of the unconstitutionality of that former act. And so it seems to me there's pretty much an agreement here that if the school district is to not have the protection of that agreement, we have to have a record, and there isn't any record. And if there isn't any record, then the district court should be affirmed, at least for when it's done, which doesn't mean that they can't go back and make a motion and say, and now's time to say this is a unitary school district, even though it's almost an all-black school as it was in 91.
I would agree. I totally agree with you, Your Honor. Spot on.
Very well. Thank you,
Mr.
Hurst. Mr. Askew, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. At Joint Appendix 303, in the order setting the hearing that we had, Judge Dawson told the parties, you will not present evidence. He told us that. So he said, instead, we're going to have argument to decide what to do from here.
But didn't both parties also say, well, we think that this is just a change in law issue and we really don't need to put on any evidence?
Yes. That's certainly our position. I mean, what more do we need to show for the repeal of the statute and the Teague case and the parents involved case in Adirond?
So your position is that it wasn't necessary to put on any evidence other than the fact that the 1989 statute had been declared unconstitutional?
To show that was a significant change in circumstances and a court of equity must do something. Absolutely. There was
is a tactical question that you may choose not to answer, but why didn't you just ask for a modification that eliminated references to the 1989 Act?
Well, maybe that's what we should have done. I don't think that Rule 60B-5
tells
us... It
seems like you took too big a bite of the apple by asking for full termination.
I get that. And here, today, in light of what's happened, certainly I understand why you're sitting there asking why I didn't do that to begin with. Rule 60B-5, I don't think, requires that we declare whether we're seeking termination or a lesser included equitable remedy. Equitable courts, which is what we're dealing with here, operate along a spectrum. And anywhere along that spectrum, the court can do equity. We're asking for equity. I believe that there's nothing other than the 1989 Act that animates this settlement agreement. So, you know, that's the position that we took. I offered to present evidence if the court thought any evidence was going to be necessary. Mr. Roberts did the same thing. The court ruled instead that there's no evidence necessary. I don't want to be accused of appealing a case where I could have presented evidence and failed to, because I would be embarrassed to be in that position. That's not the position I'm in. Judge Dawson said we couldn't put on any evidence.
Well, you know, when a judge says you can't present evidence, and if you feel that you've got to have evidence, you make a record and say, this is the evidence we'd show. We don't have any record of that.
That's what we did.
So I think, really, I mean, I'm not trying to make a decision here yet, but from what the arguments I get, it looks to me like nobody's going to lose anything if you've still got a remedy to go back and say, hey, the whole thing is over, and let's make it over. So go back, and you can go back and do that if we affirm. So I don't see that you're going to lose something except some little time.
Maybe a little pride, Your Honor. I think I did tell Judge Dawson at the hearing that we had that if he needed evidence, we would put on evidence. So I think I did that. The notion that we have evidence in the record is false. There is no evidence that was offered or received. So this idea that Garland County has a racial composition, that's just lawyer words. It's not evidence. We don't have any evidence in this record. Thank you, Your Honors. We request reversal and remand for application of the proper standard. Thank
you. Very well. Thank you. Counsel, we appreciate your briefing and arguments today. The case will be submitted and an opinion issued in due course. Judge Bright, would you